This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Tuesday, 9th of August, 2022, and markets, of course, the day after we title our podcast. This market is not for turning. It did jump to a new high yesterday. It felt like the only way was up lately in these markets, but we did finally turn lower, and it actually gives bears arguably a little pattern reversal here and a hook for trying the short side finally in the U.S. equity market after this tremendous run off those June lows. At least that's the setup here after a nice little shooting star candlestick. You can see that on slide two. Pretty modest reversal. It wasn't like it was a really high volatility day, but it is a decent pattern. Let's see if it leads to anything here. Not sure what exactly was spooking the market, as we didn't see any fresh rise in yields or anything. It just feels like it was a day when finally the sentiment rolled over. Interesting to see, Peter, I can't help but laugh a little bit. At the top of our Saxo Equity Theme Basket performance overview there on slide two is crypto and blockchain with a one-day performance of 4.4%. The very day that NVIDIA was out with its tremendous guidance cut, and likely a lot of that linked to, the company never likes to admit it, but our sort of circumstantial evidence and our suspicion is that that is linked to a reduction perhaps in the profitability of crypto mining, and therefore for ordering these rigs with NVIDIA chips and so on to do that crypto mining. So I'll let you take it away from there.
Yeah, so if you look at the performance yesterday, I actually want to take a quick detour before we talk about NVIDIA, and then I'll come back to some geopolitical risks. So, but if we start with, as you say, bubble stocks and crypto and blockchain stocks were really doing well yesterday. I think it's remarkable to see that it only took a rally of around 10% from the lows to really ignite a forest fire of meme stocks, speculative behavior again. We had the Hong Kong, company that suddenly had listed in the US that suddenly had a market value above Alibaba at one point. We have Bed Bath & Beyond rallying 126% in six trading sessions. I mean, it's just, I think the wrong word is it's the wrong word. I don't feel ashamed, but I feel angry that the equity market has turned into this ridiculous circus and shenanigans. I really hope that if you're sitting in the U.S. Central Bank, the Fed, you must be thinking, let's take these Fed funds rate to 5% and kill all this stupid behavior. I mean, the excess is still evident in the system. It's just unbearable. It's so non-productive. So that's the cynical takeaway from my part on that. And then, as you correctly said, it is ironic that the crypto is doing so well given what we saw with NVIDIA on slide three. The shares were down 6% yesterday. Massive guidance cut to the current quarter. So they had communicated $8.1 billion in revenue, but they took it down by $1.4 billion. I think it's quite curious that they do it a week after the quarter ended. You're not going to tell me that 2 weeks or 3 weeks ago, or maybe even 4 weeks ago, they didn't see the writing on the wall. I find it very late that they come to the table and bring it forward the real numbers. But that's a side comment. They also take down the growth margin from 65% to 44%. So that's a healthy 20 percentage point reduction right there. And the key thing, and we write that in our equity note yesterday, you can find it on analysis.saxo, is that they talk about a slowdown in gaming, and that has caused demand to weakening. They also take a 1.3 billion inventory write down. And the reason is, and we show this, that there is a great it's a great site that is tracking profitability in the crypto mining industry. And the last time NVIDIA was hit very hard back in 2018, it was due to very, very low profitability of crypto miners coming off a massive frenzy and the gallop in late 2017 before the Bitcoin futures were launched and all that. And that created an overhang of supply in the market. And it's exactly what is happening as well here. You had record profitability for crypto mining back in October, November of last year. A lot of demand were pulled forward. Crypto mining exploded. A lot of GPUs were sold, and NVIDIA ramped up production. Now profitability is in the toilet. And you can see in all these reseller sites that the market is being flooded with the used GPUs. and the prices are collapsing, and that's why they're taking this write down, and that is the reason why they're seeing a demand destruction. It has nothing to do with gaming. I think overall gaming demand is quite stable. It's not as volatile. So of course it's the crypto, but let's see where it ends. There was a little bit of a bid coming in because they are saying that they don't see a big change to the long-term outlook for their margins. And then quickly, John, and then I'll let you and Ole go on. I think that on a personal level, I've been very alarmed of the news that are coming out geopolitically. Turkey is deepening its economic ties with Russia. Being a NATO member, I don't know what is really going on here, but concerns are really mounting inside the US and Europe over this. And then you have China, which is expanding the military drills around Taiwan. It almost looked like they are making a full blockade in the airspace and the waterways around the island. Very concerning as well. And there is a growing consensus inside the EU to potentially treat China as an economic and security threat to the EU. So I think there's a lot of worrying developments here. And I think this whole deglobalization theme is unfolding very rapidly here in a very concerning way.
Also because there's the idea and probably the reality to some degree that China certainly could serve as a sort of transshipment for all these products that Russia is not able to get directly from former trading partners that are now heavily sanctioning just about everything. They can simply have China order the goods and then transship to Russia. I think Turkey, to some degree, being accused of that as well. No direct evidence of that. I think it's out there in the air. Plus, they agreed. I saw one headline that they agreed to pay for Russian, I don't know if it was gas or oil, probably gas, with rubles, as Russia has requested. Before I get to you, Ola, I just want to emphasize where we have gotten to in terms of risk sentiment. We've talked about, of course, you can see it in the equity averages having rallied so heavily off of those June lows. But something like our global risk indicator also beginning to show its most complacent level, getting close to neutral and actually above the moving average. As you see on slide 4, the risk indicator there. So apparently the world is looking in a much better place according to risk sentiment than it was the day that Russia invaded Ukraine. Of course, that happened already back in early April. We were at a very complacent point here. And then something like the corporate high yield spread, which is one of these contributors to that overall risk indicator. I'm just pulling this one out specifically. You can see the degree to which corporate credit has just collapsed. The market really is primed for a very soft landing, certainly for the credit cycle, expecting the Fed to peak in December at the December FOMC meeting and potentially roll over already mid next year. Very soft landing being priced by forward markets, disinflation, et cetera, et cetera. So, Ola, I don't know what you can tell us, at least on the commodity side of the potential disinflation, but there are some commodities that are certainly perking up. And I know your view on in the energy complex is not for necessarily lower prices.
No, that's right, John. We talked about it yesterday. We are stuck here mid-90s in Brent, around 90 in WTI. The market has clearly had its recession focused on in recent weeks. With that, we have removed the focus somewhat from the supply side. But we have to remember that strategic reserves from the US will not continue to flow. It will flow for another few weeks, but then it will probably stop. We also got the EU embargo on Russian oil starting to kick in later this year. So the supply side is likely to remain challenged. And we also have to see whether 5 weeks of continuous drop in gasoline price in the US will potentially attract some fresh demand. And that could also be a source of that could provide a bit. So I think we haven't got the trigger at this moment in time, but I think we are at or near the bottom in the energy sector. Other markets that I think we should be focusing on right now is in the metal space. Also, the metal really kicked off the sell off in commodities. I believe all the way back in March, April, after hitting some pretty decent corrections back in July, we have seen a bounce. And I'm just focusing today on slide 6 on silver and copper. Silver has outperformed gold quite strongly recently. That obviously comes after a period of significant underperformance. So it's just reclaiming some lost ground. But looking at the silver, we broke above the 50-day moving average yesterday. We're potentially facing now resistance at 2084, which is the 61.8% retracement of the big sell-off we had between June and July. And if we do break above that level, then the market will start to contemplate whether we can make a return back to towards those June highs. In copper, at the same time, the recovery so far has been relatively shallow. You can see that from the retracement levels. We really need to take out the 368. We peaked above 360 yesterday, but the market is still short. Our speculators are still short copper futures, and for that really to change, and for the recession fear or the recession themed challenge weakness, for that to be removed, we as a minimum need to break above that 368 level.
Right, and then the gas situation. I was highlighting in our internal meeting the fact that Norway is looking to reduce its electricity exports to the rest of the EU. For those that don't know, Norway is has an embarrassment of energy surplus, not only in the oil and gas sector, but also in electricity, with these natural huge reservoirs it can make with fjords, et cetera. But the snowpack levels, et cetera, have meant that those reservoirs are far below their seasonal levels. They traditionally export a lot of their electricity because it's so cheap, but they're deciding to rein that in because of very high domestic electricity prices and because the seasonal reservoir levels are far below what they normally are. So this is an interesting decision. It only adds to the endless woes we're seeing across Europe. I don't know what the latest is, though, on the actual gas situation for Europe, Ole.
Well, only the fact that it's punitively expensive. Industrial demand has started to come down, together with robust imports from LNG. We have actually managed to build storages at reasonably satisfactory levels. On slide 7, I'm just showing the actual number in storage. But if you look at the percentage of capacity, we actually more or less bang on the 5-year average line. So storage levels are building, but it's building from a point of weakness, given the industrial demand has been suffering, and LNG shipments coming in at a rapid pace. We have to remember we're already now starting to see increased competition from Asia. They clearly will want to rebuild their stock levels as well ahead of their winter. So we've had the playing field a little bit to ourselves recently, not only due to high price but also reduced demand from Asia. But that is likely to change over the coming weeks. So we are most certainly not out of the woods yet, and just take a look at the top right chart. That's the price of winter gas. That's basically the whole period from October to March next year. That's still priced around 200 euros, and I wonder what kind of industries can make money at those kind of levels throughout the winter. So yeah, we're still challenged, and everything all focus on Russia, where obviously it almost can't get any worse. You can see on the bottom right, that's the dark blue at the bottom. That's basically supplies from Russia. And you can see we were from around 300 million cubic meters a day in the good old days. We are now trailing. We're somewhere around the 40-50 mark. So it is still what makes the market so nervous.
Right. And then in the food front, one thing we can thank Turkey for and Erdogan for is helping to broker a deal to get some of this grain out of Ukraine. Of course, Turkey relying on those supplies, and a lot of the Middle East and in the whole area reliant on Ukraine supplies. I know Egypt, for example. So things have really quieted down there in the grain market.
It has, and we can see some of the first shipments that went out of that left Ukraine. They surprise, went to Turkey. So they're obviously trying to get their own storage situation under control. But it has removed some of the fears in the market. But I mean, these shipments need to continue on a regular basis in order to ensure that we get storage levels down in Ukraine, and they have enough room for the incoming harvest. But generally, just looking from the helicopter, speculators, they have been badly burnt by this sharp 30+% correction we had since May. You can see that here on slide 8. The blue line is the speculative length. It hit a record 800,000 or above 800,000 lots. If you look at the six major crop futures back in March, April. Since then, we've seen almost continuous selling until last week, where we saw the first signs of buyers starting to return. And we're also seeing the price action now for the past month on the index as a whole that we've actually been consolidating. So I think the chance of further weakness, at least in the short term, is probably not going to is probably to be much more difficult to achieve. We enter a very critical month of August ahead of the harvest, especially in the US. And we got very dry and hot weather in the US, just like we've seen elsewhere, especially here in Europe. And that potentially could lower the crop condition. So we need to, the key focus this week will be the monthly World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimate report that comes out on Friday. There's plenty of uncertainties that Margaret will look for some clarification on in that report.
All right, we'll look forward to that. Now let's head back to equities and incoming earnings reports. Peter, you're highlighting this the CHIPS Act on your overview on slide 9 and Global Foundries. There should be with this CHIPS Act, which is the U.S. Wanting to reshore at least a very sizable percentage of the semiconductor production. Those companies that can contribute to that effort should be in for some sustained upside, you'd think.
Yeah, there have been a lot of positive commentaries around the CHIPS Act. It's a big deal. It's the biggest the U.S. have done in recent memory within a technology field, and it comes with money and constraints for foreign manufacturers as well. And here in particular, South Korea and Japanese semiconductor manufacturers have come into play. We're coming back to the deglobalization theme because what it really means, the U.S. CHIPS Act, is that the U.S. is trying to mold South Korean and Japanese semiconductor manufacturers into its ecosystem and shut it off from expanding production in China. China's been very furious over this, and they're pressuring South Korea. And it just accelerates these decision points where countries will have to decide which way they're leaning. So that's why I think the U.S. CHIPS Act can be seen down this line. And I think it's also a sign, if you ask me, that the U.S. intelligence and security intelligence services have basically come to the conclusion that eventually it's unpredictable, of course, but there is a heightened probability that Taiwan cannot be relied on in terms of supplies and being part of the U.S. supply chain for semiconductors. And that's why they need to expand their domestic production. So we will look at Global Foundries. They've already tapped into the program or tried to get funds for a big plant that they're building in the U.S. already. I'm very curious to what they say about this CHIPS Act and how it actually shapes their outlook for the industry. And then besides Global Foundries, we also have earnings from Coinbase Global. A very, very steep and dramatic decline in revenue was expected there, a 62% drop in revenue in Q2 and a $500 million of loss expected for the companies. So they basically losing more than 50 cents on each dollar of revenue. So they need to cut costs and they need to cut it fast. And they just did a deal with BlackRock, as we featured on this this podcast recently, easing the access for institutional investors. We're curious to see what they sort of expect from that that deal, and if they are seeing other signs of an improvement in the overall industry.
All right, and then on the macro calendar highlights on slide 10, not a busy day in terms of hefty data, but we do have a series of Treasury auctions. The Treasury market. Yesterday, we sort of rewinded most of the rise in the yields we saw on the back of the Friday jobs report. There was a New York Fed inflation expectation survey that saw a dramatic shift lower in 1 to 3 year inflation expectations. The cynical view on that would be that those shorter term expectations just link up so closely with the price for gasoline, which, as we'll discuss, has really fallen sharply in the U.S. It was peaked above $5 for normal gasoline grades in the U.S. at the retail level, and is all the way back down to $4 now. So that 25% drop is quite considerable. Let's see if it can drop further or rises back. But anyway, we have the NFIB Small Business Optimism, so another sentiment survey out there. And then the three-year Treasury auction will be the first of 3 days of auctions that are a bit more interesting. So the three-year today, the 10-year tomorrow, and the 30-year T-bond auction on Thursday. Then we have the latest weekly oil inventory report from the U.S. Interesting there, plus the normal DOE numbers tomorrow, as there have been charges that some of these demand data points are being manipulated. There was an article I tweeted out yesterday for further updates or for further information on that. And then Chinese PPI, CPI up tonight with the U.S. July CPI tomorrow, the key data point of the week, really, for potential data surprise and sparking some shifts in sentiment here. All right, let's see if this little rollover in sentiment we saw yesterday is the beginning of something bigger or just a brief and very temporary tactical point of exhaustion. And we'll see where things and we'll see where things stand tomorrow with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter @SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.